to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is your sometimes host, Evan Birchfield. I'm joined once again by three of our staffers. We've got a couple new people and a couple people we don't see very often. One of our regulars we have with us this time is Daniel Bloodworth, who is our content editor.
Hey.
And I also have Windy Man, Steven Rodriguez, our news editor. And mailbag editor.
Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing?
And we also have Michael Cole, radio trivia guy, and our IT director and senior editor.
Wahey! Oh, yeah. Oh, hi, guys.
And vocal impersonator. One of the things I want to talk about today is that we had an article posted on PGC recently called the GameCube Lost Gems article. And something that we got to look back at old GameCube games that we really liked, we really appreciated, and that kind of may have slipped through the cracks. And for me personally, one of the ones that is huge, it's very hard to get a copy of. I had to buy mine online on half.com for a little bit more than half of the actual game, the game's actual price. And that was Beyond Good and Evil. I think that is really a classic and an excellent game. Something that did get overlooked, and I want a sequel for, personally. Steven, do you have any game on that list that you in particular want to emphasize as one of the GameCube's lost gems?
Yeah, you know, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. I actually got to play a lot with Bloodworth. It's definitely lost because the majority of the GameCube audience does not have the means or the will to play it, because you need the Game Boys, you need the Game Boy GameCube link cables, and you need at least two or three more people to properly play it and respect it for the game that it is. And, you know, that game was the most fun I've had playing an RPG in a really long time. It really drove home the connectivity thing for me, even though it was like one of three, maybe four games that really showed that something like that could work. But it didn't, because there were only three or four of those games.
Well, what about you, Blood? Do you have a favorite on that list?
I don't know. I'm trying to pick one here. Baten Kaitos, I think a lot of people missed out. And, you know, TYP was just showing me the sequel. You know, and I had the crazy marathon on that game. I had to early copy, and I had to get it done before it came out. So I had to play, like, an 80-hour game in a week.
Wow.
And I think I got to like 60 something before I finally like wrote the review out of exhaustion, but then I still finished it up because I knew I wouldn't otherwise. But I really liked it. I liked how active the card system was, and that you were doing things on defense as well as offense and stringing together combos and all of that. And I don't think a lot of people really knew about it or had a chance to check it out in busy November.
A little off topic, both Blood and TYP can answer this for me. Having never played the original, should I pick up the sequel first, or should I pick up the original if I'm looking for a game to play?
I haven't gotten far enough in Baten Kaitos Origins to be able to tell you if like you need to have played the first one. I would argue that the battle system is actually quite different in the sequel, and I think it's actually a bit more approachable. It got kind of unwieldy at times in the first one, and although it may get more complex as I get further through the game. We'll only put in like 6 hours, but it seems more manageable. I'd say go with the sequel, I guess.
Okay.
Or the prequel, I guess, as it probably more accurately.
Hey, and you know, while we're on the subject of card RPGs, let's also not forget about Lost Kingdoms and Lost Kingdoms 2. I didn't like card RPGs until I played Lost Kingdoms, and you know, that kind of sold me on, that's why I went to go play Baten Kaitos, and I liked that game too, although I didn't finish it because I got to an impossible point, but still I liked it. So if you like the card RPGs, Lost Kingdoms too.
You know what my favorite card RPG is the Pokemon trading card game for Game Boy.
I don't
that game is so good. I'm not even joking. I really love that game. I played that for so many straight vacations. There's only so many cards you can get, but I just played it over and over and over. I got the same cards over and over. Gosh, that was stupid. TYP, I didn't get to hear what your game was off of that list that you think is a particularly emphasized.
Well, it's kind of funny. I was tempted to bring up Baton Kaitos myself until Dan did. I want to give a shout out to Four Swords Adventures, but since Wendy already touched on Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, which has kind of the co-op action going on, I want to talk about Donkey Kong Jungle Beat.
Ooh.
Because that one was a lot of fun, and it was kind of an unexpected game. And it's really, you know, a deceptive game, too, because it looks like a platformer, and to a certain degree it really is, but it's also a rhythm game, and you may not realize it right away. And so there's surprising depth in there, and I think a lot of people may have passed up on the depth of it, maybe not our PGC readers, but overall, because if you play through it just as a platformer, oh yeah, it's real easy, I just got through it. It's really like an arcade game where you go back and you improve your scores, and you find a lot of fun in, you know, getting that perfect combo. And so I think it's just sort of a unexpected game to come out of Nintendo.
It's certainly unexpected to be playing it and realize exactly what it is that you're doing in order to play the game. And you wonder, do I look like this when I'm playing video games normally? Because I feel really foolish. That was me personally. I became very self-conscious when I was playing it. And, you know, I live by myself. I don't have anybody to really be looking at me.
So you thought that you were a dork, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I felt like a dork sitting there banging on the bongos and then, you know, clapping, and I just
speaking of that, the reason why I didn't give Jungle Beat a chance is because I played it at E3, and that was not the best environment to present that game. It was loud, so the claps never really registered correctly, and you're slapping your hands really hard so it picks it up, and your hands are all red and they hurt afterwards. And I was like, you know, I can't see myself playing this game based on what Nintendo showed me.
Well, you weren't playing it right. You got to be careful. You got to...
take off your rings.
Well, you got to use your fingertips. You know, oftentimes fingertips are enough, and you won't hurt yourself as badly.
And also at E3, there's when you have a pack of people watching you play a game, and especially if one of them really thinks they know what's going on, and they're looking over your shoulder, and they want to tell you what to do, and it can be a strenuous environment. You know, speaking of a place to feel dumb playing a video game, I felt dumb when I couldn't figure out controls on some of those Wii games, and I was just kind of lost for a minute until I had to ask the attendant and say, "So what am I doing wrong?" That was embarrassing too.
Bring on the new E3.
Yeah, looking forward to that too. So yeah, anyways, that's enough of that. I'm going to take a quick little break and we'll be right back.
Hey there, Radio Free Nintendo fans. This is Carl Castaneda, the podcast pirate. As you probably already know, our Naruto contest is underway. All you got to do is send in an up to 30-second audio clip of you talking about Naruto, maybe a little pimping for Radio Free Nintendo, and you get some cool stuff like Naruto Clash Ninja 2, and some kick-ass swag. But just to be sure, here's an example of what not to do, courtesy of the other podcast pirate, Stan Ferguson.
Radio Free Nintendo is great tasting. I love it. And Naruto, because Naruto is totally out of bounds, man. Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Put me on the show, okay? Put me on the show.
Wow. Yeah, he's fired. So, if you guys want to send in something, make sure it's not something like that. If you're curious of the rules, go to planetgamecube.com where we've got the contest details set up. And send your entries to contest@planetgamecube.com. And anyway, back to Evan and the boys at Radio Free Nintendo.
And we're back. And the next topic that I want to talk about today is one of those major announcements. I shouldn't say major. One of those big announcements that's happened since the major announcements at the New York conference on Wii. And that is play history on Wii. Something that we found out in one of those interviews that Iwata is holding and posting transcripts for on all of the websites, all of Nintendo's websites. Play history available to see how often you play certain games. And also a message board available so that you can post messages for other people and also that in your household and also online. So, Wendy, I want to talk to you about this since you've been reading a lot up on that. How is this going to impact Wii players and gamers, do you think?
Well, everybody's complaining that Nintendo's kind of dropping the ball on online, especially with the DS. You need the friend codes for every single person for every single game you play with them. And judging from what I've read on the Iwata Ask interviews, which we got the story from, it looks like that the message board and the play history and all that stuff is going to be the what it is to Wii as Xbox Live is to the Xbox and the Xbox 360. So it's going to be that central hub where everybody can, you know, like friends and, you know, the messages, and you can see what other people are playing, that kind of thing. And I'm actually really looking forward to see how similar that's going to be to Xbox Live, because Xbox Live, you got to pay $50-$60 a year. For the Wii, it's going to be, the online's going to be free.
Yeah.
So I just want to see where the, if the direct comparison can be a fair one.
Yeah, well, certainly Xbox Live is a very well-integrated, user-friendly, but also complex enough system to have the value for the money that you're paying every year.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be comparable at all? Do you think Nintendo could do anything for free?
It's gonna be comparable enough to where I can play games online. I don't think it's going to be as easy to play against the people you want, because with the DS, it was kind of a crapshoot. Even if you wanted to play against your friends, you had no idea if they were online or not. Hopefully, that will change on the Wii, or I can see, okay, you know, TYP is playing this, and Blower's playing this. Ooh, I can go in and play them. I want that. Xbox Live gives me that. And in fact, live on a 360, it not only tells me what game they're playing, it tells me what they are doing, like what level they are on, or how many laps they have left. I doubt we'll ever see something like that on the Wii, but my main want is to be able to just say, these are the games my friends are playing, I can go over and join them. That's all I want. If I can get that, I'm happy.
So, TYP, I want to ask you, do you feel like play history on Wii or a message board system, whether it's online or just local, do you feel like that's going to impact your playing, your gameplay experience with Wii or your experience with the system?
It's a good question, because I have to confess, I'm not a big online player. I mean, even when, you know, I got Mario Kart, you know, for DS online and stuff, it's like, I don't know. I'm still not convinced that I'm going to be a long-term online gamer. I like playing with my friends online. And so I guess to that extent, knowing what people are playing, you know, in the last few days, and if I can post a message saying, hey, do you want to play, that's great. But that isn't necessarily real time, you know. So if I could just hop on AIM and tell them, you know, so what's the difference?
I guess that's where
I'm going. I mean,
I can agree.
It's cool if they're not on right now at the same time, because then when they turn it on, they can see the message. But you could also email them, you know.
Yeah. Not to mention that current handheld DS online gaming, you have to have a chat protocol like AIM if you want to play with someone that you know. Even Metroid on the DS, if you don't make a plan to speak with somebody to play with someone beforehand, there's no way you're going to find them online, because you only store 60 friends, and chances are not good. So, Blood, though, you play a lot. We played a lot of Metroid when it first came out online, and you seem to be kind of branching out there. How do you think that's going to affect your playing?
Well, I think the probably the one thing a lot of people haven't inferred from that is that, you know, it looks like you're going to have a one-time friend code, which makes sense because you have the internal memory, whereas the DS, the memory is actually in the game cards. So I think that'll simplify things a lot for people that have been playing on DS. And because then, you know, as they're saying, all of your friends that you've added to your system are going to see your messages. They're going to see if you've gotten a new game. So that integration is there. Play history, I think it's going to be just one of those silly little statistics like in Smash Brothers. You know, yeah. If parents want to use it, then they can, but it's not something I see being that big of an impact. But it's just kind of a neat thing to have stuck on there.
Yeah, I can certainly agree. Well, I want to completely shift gears now for a moment, because something within the gaming community, one of these things that gets thrown about just about every year when we hear about the next Madden game is, when is the guy who's on the cover of the Madden game going to get injured? Is there really, indeed, a Madden curse? Of course, Sean Alexander's on the cover of Madden 07 has had a, what was it, ankle left ankle?
It's not a major ankle injury, but it's significant enough. I think he's going to miss tomorrow's game. I'm not by the time you hear this, it would have been the weekend's game. But I think it was enough for him to miss a game. So, yeah, but he got injured, and he's on the cover. So, Madden curse.
Madden curse. So, Lindy, I hear you've done a little bit of research on the Madden curse. I'm very interested to hear what you can tell us about it.
Well, when the story broke that Alexander got injured, they reported it on ESPN, of course, because, you know, top running back is injured. That's a football story. But it seems that last year, EA compiled, or not EA, ESPN, well, they're the same right now anyway. ESPN compiled a story about the Madden curse, and they put it on the ESPN website. And in it, they listed exactly what happened to each of the cover guys. From Madden 2000 was the first year they put somebody other than Madden on the cover, all the way up to Sean Alexander for this year's game, Madden 2007. So we'll work backwards. Obviously, Sean Alexander, this season, ankle injury, so he's going to miss a game.
Hey, something else could happen to him.
Yeah, the season's not over.
A helicopter could, like, fly into the field and crash into him or something.
Yes. We don't know.
It could happen.
Okay, so 2005 season for Madden 06, Donovan McNabb for the Eagles, he had a hernia, sports hernia, first game of the season. And so that'll kill your chances. And in fact, he missed the Pro Bowl for the first time in 5 years. He went to the Pro Bowl four years previous before that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it worth it, man? Was it worth it?
Okay. You know, for Madden 2005, Ray Lewis, Baltimore Ravens, he got through almost the entire season, but he missed the last game when he broke his wrists. So, you know, last game, but, you know, Madden said, boom!
Yeah.
Broke his wrist. Madden 2004, Michael Vick of the Atlanta Falcons, cover guy. The weekend after the game came out, the very same week, he broke his leg in a preseason game. He was pretty much out the entire season. That one came pretty quick. And then Madden 2002, Dante Culpepper of the Vikings.
Who's got a great name. I mean, that's just Dante Culpepper. I mean, yeah, sure. I'm putting that on my list of names for my children.
Anyways, cool names don't prevent you. He went 4-7 through 11 games, so he wasn't doing too hot. But, you know, he said, screw this, and he had a knee injury, and he was done for the season after that. So, you know, the Madden curse wasn't completely fulfilled. Like, for Madden 2001 to 2000 season, Eddie George of the Titans, he didn't get injured. He got to the playoffs. He went to the Pro Bowl. The only thing ESPN cited was he had a key turnover that basically lost them the game. But
yeah, it's kind of a stretch.
That's a stretch, yeah. And the first year Madden had an athlete on the cover was 1999 for Madden 2000. That was the year Barry Sanders, Detroit Lions, he just up and retired before training camp. Just no explanation said he's done. That's it. So he.
I think he got religion.
He's got his Madden money in
Japan. Yeah. You know, conspiracy theorists can make that argument.
So what was happening all these years when Madden was putting Madden on the cover? Obviously, it must have been like a voodoo doll to his, like, ulcers or something. Like, every year they put him on the cover, he's like, oh, my back, or something, right?
That's a good question, but...
Not documented. We ought to interview him. We ought to get him here on the podcast.
Everybody's complaining that, oh, EA's got this monopoly. Oh, what about 2K? Well, what about 2K? What about the cover athletes that have appeared on the 2K series, both from Sega when it was on the Dreamcast and Take-Two when it went multi-platform?
This sounds like a conspiracy theory, Steven.
Well, let's see. 2004 was NFL 2K5, the last Take-Two 2K NFL game. Terrell Owens, the Mr. T.O. himself. He led the team in receiving. went 13. This team went 13-3 and made it to the Super Bowl, and he went to the Pro Bowl.
Well, so you know, things worked out for him.
Okay, 2003, NFL 2K4, Warren Sapp, before he got traded to the Raiders, for which he plays for now. He played with the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay. He's a defensive line guy, but they put him in for offense a couple times, and he caught 2 touchdown passes.
Oh.
And he went to the Pro Bowl. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. 2002, NFL 2K3. Brian Urlacher, Chicago Bears, Mr. Fearsome Linebacker. He went to the Pro Bowl. And in a celebrity appearance on the Wheel of Fortune, he won $47,000 for charity.
Wow.
That's amazing. And he got to be in the same room as Pat Sajak. I mean, that's killer.
Yeah. And finally, when 2K Series was on the Dreamcast, the Sega games, Randy Moss was on all 3 of the games, 2K, 2K1, and 2K2. In 2 out of the 3 games, they got into the playoffs. The team, it went, 10 or more wins. He led his team in receiving. He went to the Pro Bowl, and actually in 2000, he was a Pro Bowl MVP. So
connect the dots for me here, Steven. What are you saying?
Well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to leave it to our listeners to make their own conclusions. Draw your own conclusions to the information I have presented. Okay.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and draw. I'm going to draw at least one conclusion out of this, which is that it's a bad idea to either play football or play football games. Yeah? No? No, I think that's a really good conclusion that we've drawn. This is the lesson we've learned today.
I don't know. I think the moral of the story is if you want to win a lot of money on Wheel of Fortune, you need to be on the cover of a football
game. But he didn't win it. He won it for a charity.
Well, no. If it was a Madden curse, he would have, broken his hand on the wheel or something.
All right, point taken.
That's true. All right, well, thank you very much, Wendy, for the insightful commentary.
It's hard-hitting journalism. Okay?
This is, you heard it here first, folks, on Radio Free Nintendo. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey there, Radio Free Nintendo fans. This is once again Carl Castaneda, the Podcast Pirate, coming at you with ways to screw up our Naruto contest. Once again, Stan has sent in an absolutely horrendous entry. I don't even know what to make of this. I think I need to hear it again, and so do you.
Ah, bonsoir. Welcome to my poetry reading home. My first poem is entitled The Bag and the Baguette. Rip, it is destroying my country. The nation of my testicles are fascinated to the monkeys in the parliament. Fastidious is a big word. Come, my little birdie, fly. Yes, thank you. That was my first poem. I hope you did enjoy it. Yes. Oui. I call this next one The Cigarette of Truth. My lightning will strike your rod and bury you, for I am the greatness of Zeus. I will eat your breakfast for dinner and make passionate love to your mistress and her wife. No one could feel my pain without vomiting. Thank you for listening. I hope your days are filled with much love and happiness.
So see, here's how the equation works. Add a complete disregard for the size limit, okay, plus the fact that there was no Naruto, equals a jackass. Yeah, so when you send in your entries, please don't send in something like that, because I might have to strangle you. Again, that address is contest@planetgamecube.com. Looking forward to seeing your entries. Now back to Evan and the guys at Radio Free Nintendo.
And we're back, and we're going to read some of our listener mail. Wow. Some mail that we got from a reader who was responding. He sent this to me actually a couple weeks back, but I wanted to go ahead and talk with it. Now I've got this group of people here. His statement, the reader's name is Triforce, and his comment was, whenever I read Planet GameCube or listen to the podcast, I sometimes get a feeling that the PGC crew is a bit more nervous about Wii than most other gaming news sources, whether they be Nintendo-centric or otherwise. The recent editorial about how the two versions of Zelda would be one is one example. Planet GameCube doesn't seem to embrace the Wii controller as readily as others have, and he says that he hasn't played Wii, so he doesn't know if his opinion is totally valid, but he's curious to know if we could explain what our approach to Wii is and if that's all intentional. Certainly, one of the things he brings up right off the bat is there's been more than one editorial on Zelda. There's been one by me, one by Carl Castaneda, and also impressions for Zelda by multiple staffers, which have varied in their worry about. There was one by Aaron Kaluska where he said it was probably the worst game that he had played at E3 on Wii. There was one by Bloodworth, which said that it was not, that it was actually very good. So there's a variety of opinions there. I would say that other gaming news sources aren't Nintendo-centric. I think that's the first thing I would like to say about that question. I wanted to get your guys' opinions on how you personally feel about Wii. We've all played it. We were all there at E3 and we played it. And how you personally can respond to this about Planet GameCube as a whole and with your experience, do you think that we're more cautious than other websites? And I want to start with you, TYP.
GameCube, and not just with Wii, but with everything, you have to keep in mind that as a website, we don't try to take a single stance on any one topic, be it a game or a system or whatever. I mean, that's why we have multiple reviews for key titles. I mean, we had like four for Super Mario Sunshine or whatever, the fourth of which, or maybe it was three, but, you know, we're just different people. We have different opinions, and as such, you know, we can represent multiple opinions without having to take a site stance on opinions. So, my personal opinion is that the Wii has a lot of promise. I wouldn't say it's like the end all be all because the developer really needs to be smart about how they use the controller. But that can be said of any control interface. I had some really fun experiences with Wii, and I've had some frustrating ones because of either inherent issues with the controller or just how the device was used with the game. I mean, there's no way to know the center when you're tilting the controller. Like with Tony Hawk or whatever, you kind of sort of have to get a guessable feel as to where the center is because there's no physical feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's the only real issue I have with the Wii controller, to be mm-hmm. honest. With very few instances do we actually need more buttons and things like that. As for the, you know, the Zelda two systems, I agree it's a bit of a coup, especially since it's coming out on Wii first now. But, you know, I'll take it as it gives me, and if, you know, if I think the Wii really is adding to this game, you know, the controller and everything, then, you know, I'll take it for what it's worth. You know, I'll say it's a good game. And I'm really hoping that it's, you know, fun.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious that all of us here are going to be buying the Wii version of Zelda because we want that. That's the new system. We want that to be the definitive one. There's no way that we're not going to do that, especially now that the GameCube version is coming out 2 weeks later. I think that's unavoidable. Yeah, that's so it absolutely is. What can we do about that? We have to hope that Nintendo is, you know, Mike Gammon's impressions of Zelda at the New York event were positive, extremely positive, and that's good news. So, Steven, how do you feel about this topic?
I'm cautiously optimistic, and I think that's I'm speaking for the entire staff when I say that, because even though there's so much there's so much promise in the thing, but after the, 30 or so games Nintendo has promised for the quote-unquote launch window up until March, and you know the usual stuff we're going to get from Nintendo, what's there going to be? Are there going to be more ports? Are there going to be more gimmicky controller waggling? Nobody knows, and it's not a slam dunk that the Wii is going to succeed it by any stretch of the imagination. Nintendo's still got to prove itself out in the retail marketplace. It's promising that they'll be able to do it, but we have to see if they're going to do it.
Yeah, Absolutely. And we have to consider, too, at E3, for every Mario or Metroid, there was still a Necronesia or a Bomberman Land that we had to deal with. That was a third party trying to implement something that just wasn't worth it.
Well, the way I see it is that if your system has shovelware, that's good because there's an audience to buy that shovelware.
That's kind of a backwards way of looking at it.
Yeah, like, how many crap, besides the multi-platform stuff, how many crap games came out for the GameCube? Not many, because publishers knew, well, we're not going to put our crap game on there because nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah, and that's something that we definitely saw on the PS1 and the PS2, is that you had to wade through a lot of crap to get to the good stuff.
And the Game Boy.
And also the Game Boy. Yeah, and the Game Boy Advance to this day. The Game Boy Advance doesn't even have premier titles anymore. It's all crap. By the way, Unfabulous shipped. Who's buying it? No one? Oh, okay. Blood, how do you feel about the attitude towards Wii on our site?
I think it's largely your attitude that people are responding to. But my opinion of the Wii, I think I'm more optimistic just because of the difference we saw at E3 for the Wii compared to what we saw for the DS. I mean, at the DS, like, nothing there looked like we'd really want to play it. It's like we're tapping the screen to shoot Metroid. And it did take the DS a while to ramp up, and Wii actually looked like it had real games. I'd have to say the only thing that's still puzzling me is what kinds of things they're going to be bringing to get these new audiences. You know, we've seen Wii Sports and Wii Play and Brain Academy, but other than that, I'm not seeing a lot of new concepts that are supposed to bring in these casual gamers and senior citizens, except for maybe the channels, but that'll just get people to, I don't know, hit the wrong channel and play a game instead of hit the news.
So, but wouldn't you at least say that? I mean, well, Blood, I never actually found out what you thought about Red Steel. Did you play Red Steel at E3, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
What did you think?
At first, I liked it better than Metroid until I got back and got to play Metroid a little bit more. But I'm not sure. It seems like slightly above average first-person shooter. I don't know if it really has enough in it to distinguish itself from, you know, the multitude of Far Cry and Max Payne and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, that was like the biggest thing that proved that, you know, if this is the flagship, this is the first Wii game that was ever confirmed, this is the big third-party thing that Nintendo's now moving Metroid out of the way, maybe, so that there's room for Red Steel at launch. When we look at it and you played it and it was kind of as disappointing as it was and nowhere near as awe-inspiring as Metroid was to me, that was one of those moments where I was kind of like, well, you know, Metroid is using the controller perfectly. Mario is using it in some ways, but it's still just a Mario game. It controls in a pretty typical way. It's got some new features and that's it. Red Steel, Zelda kind of feel like it's a gimmick. And it's not adding anything to it, so.
I think we need to be careful what we say about Zelda based on the E3 controllers, because they really tell them. Like,
yeah,
really
absolutely, and that's all.
And so I'd be wary. I agree that at E3 some of the controls were kind of wonky for Zelda, but I'm not going to let that affect my preconception of the current controls.
And I think they've been doing a lot to Red Steel as well. I've heard some comments about the sword fighting changing. So it is going to be one of these things. I've got Red Steel on my list just because it's going to be different than a lot of the other games I'm buying, and I just want to see it. But as far as how it's going to turn out, it really is kind of hard to tell at this point because things were still, they were getting these fine-tuned things down just from our feedback. They were, you know, they were just taking and processing what everyone was doing, and now you see that we have like a third control scheme in Metroid, you know, for a different sensitivity.
Yeah. I just think I take Steven's stance of being cautiously optimistic. There's games that I know I'm going to love on the system when I get them. I personally am anticipating loving Zelda, and I think I'm going to have a good time with Rayman as well. Trauma Center. These are going to be good games to own on Wii. Sonic. I know TYP hated Sonic.
No. Sonic, which one? Are we talking about Sonic, the Mystical Rings, whatever it's called now? The one that was on
Wii?
Yeah,
so were you the one who liked it?
Yes, I actually liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
But I I'm not sure it's enough for a full game. It felt like a really fun, like, mini game, you know, for, like, the Chaos Emerald kind of thing. I had a lot of fun playing it. I'm not sure if it's going to hold its own for an entire game unless they do a lot of really clever stuff with branching paths.
Sure.
Now, while we're talking about Sonic, have you seen the trailer that came out of Tokyo Game Show? Everybody has to go and watch that trailer somewhere. Just find it, because it is like a flashback to the 80s.
It is.
There's this little Japanese boy that walks into the room, and there's this enormous TV in his bedroom at the foot of his bed, and then Sonic is sitting there just flipping this controller like somehow he got on his TV without anybody knowing. And then he sucks the little boy into the game, and then he's superimposed with this white halo around him through the whole thing, moving back and forth with the Wii
controller.
Sounds
like the 80s, yeah. All right.
It's pretty bad. It is pretty bad. I'll try to link it on our main page or something.
Hey, you know, speaking of Sonic, I actually got the demo of the 360 game, and I played it, and I was thinking, well, you know, this is good. And for a brief moment, I remember playing the original Sonic games on the Genesis, and you just jump around, you just jump and run to the left and run to the right really, really fast. And I lost that feeling the second the camera screwed me up.
Welcome to the world of 3D Sonic.
And then I thought about the Wii version. Well, in the Wii version, the camera's always behind you. So in a way, doesn't that kind of make it like a proper 3D version of the 2D Sonics, where the camera was always sideways?
I think so, too.
I think so, too.
So it's kind of funny that in playing the Xbox 360 demo, I actually want to get the Wii version now.
Yeah, well, what would have pulled me out of, from what I've heard of the Xbox version of Sonic, would be the multiple characters, vehicles, the fact that Shadow is in it.
Shadow.
I'm sorry, any of those things would have just kept me away from it. And I heard about it at E3, how, you know, they're making Sonic on Wii this bare bones only Sonic action game on rails. Yeah, and then they're making the other Sonic game on Xbox. It's got all these characters, all these branching paths, and all this
3D camera.
And it's like, God, haven't they learned that it doesn't work?
They're never
going to
fix their camera.
No, they're not.
I think that it's just impossible for them to figure out the camera. And I have something, I know I've said it before, maybe in reviews, but certainly when I'm hosting Radio Trivia. Sonic Team is very good at making fun demos, and a demo, they recognize what their best part of their game is, and they always make it the first level, and so that's their demo, and you know it's really good, and you think the entire game's gonna be like that, and it isn't.
Sonic Adventure 2 is such a classic example of that. That was an amazing demo. It was shocking to play that level up. And be like, whoa, that car's coming right at you. Never mind the fact that the camera is in front of Sonic and you can't see where you're going. And playing it was actually pretty pointless. You were just watching it. It was still great. So yeah, I'm with you there. So on that same topic, on the not on Sonic, but on Wii and how maybe because we're... One of the things that I was thinking was maybe because the only thing we got to see at E3 was Wii, that we were seeing the good and the bad of it. A lot of other sites, because they're multi-console, had the chance to see Wii as compared to Xbox 360 or Wii as compared to PS3, and there were some disappointments there on the other side, more on PS3 than Xbox 360. So for them, Wii was a breath of fresh air. That's where I want to move now, which is onto the Xbox 360 has got some good games coming out for it, and I've been historically in the current generation, a single console gamer. I stick with Nintendo, and then I'll wait until a system's old and cheap to buy the competitor. I think that a lot of us on PGC and in the Nintendo fanboy group do that. We ignore other things, and I'm really tempted to branch out into this current generation, plunk down $400, buy a 360 for things like BioShock, Assassin's Creed, Gears of War, Banjo-Kazooie. Maybe no one's with me on that one. So before we go on to this topic a little bit too much.
The carcass of Banjo-Kazooie.
Blood? What's wrong? Tell me what's wrong.
Oh, I just saw a couple of the screenshots in the video, and the character design is just... ugly, I have no trust in Rare anymore. I don't believe that this, if anything, it'll be the hit game of 2009, and that's the best thing
about it. TYP, didn't you have an opinion on Banjo-Kazooie you were saying?
I kind of share Dan's opinion. It's a game that I could see myself looking forward to from Rare, because I'm not interested in whatever Perfect Dark Zero. And I guess maybe Pinata, maybe, kind of. But I didn't really wasn't that crazy about the stuff that was kind of like that from Nintendo, so I'm not sure I'd be crazy about the stuff from Rare. So I'd have to say I'd keep an eye on it, because I did enjoy Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. I definitely did.
Yeah.
But I agree, at least the current character design kind of reminds me of kind of the Luigi from the Space World demo, or Link from the Space World demo for the GameCube. Where it just looks off, and I'm not sure exactly why, but it looks off.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that they're going to actually use that style. However, I did just watch that video, and the only thing that bothers me, I don't care about that style. I think it looks fine. They've still got the normal voices, the guh and the and all
what's
that.
Kazooie's eyes. Come on.
Okay, they're a little creepy, but the worst thing about the video is when they actually do finally break down the wall, and then you get to see the world, and then all of a sudden you hear the banjo theme being played on an electric guitar, and that's a little like, are you guys trying to be hardcore?
No.
Banjo Kazooie.
No, the worst part was you look around.
All the things to collect. See,
there's the honeycomb. There's the music note. There's the stuff to collect. Oh, god damn, not again. Collect the thon in the next gen.
Well, the great strength, I'm really derailing us, I'm sorry, but I think the great strength of the Banjo games is how they had these lush worlds that every time you turned a corner, there was something to collect.
I definitely agree.
It definitely got a little old by the time you got through Banjo-Tooie, where it's like you would just wander into a level and all of a sudden there'd be this whining dinosaur saying, please collect these four skulls for me, I really need them. It's like, come on, give me a break. But looking at that little map of that world, it looks like, you know, on the 360 they could do something really great. On the other hand, I spent about 4 hours playing Perfect Dark Zero today with a friend on co-op, and it's not a good game.
No.
It's just not good. So anyways, my real topic I want to get to, and I want to start with you, Steven, is what does it mean to be multi-console, and what does it mean to be single console? You are a multi-console gamer now, but you didn't used to be. What caused the change, and what caused you to be a single console gamer in the first place?
Well, in the first place, for single console people, it's a matter of money. You can only, most of the time, only afford one. If you can afford more than one, quite frankly, you're an idiot for not getting more consoles if you're into games. Because for me on the GameCube, you know, it was about the time the GameCube game started to dry up a little bit, and the PS2 was there. $150, and I was like, you know, there are just too many games on the PS2 that I have to play, so I have to buy a PS2. it just got to the point where I was killing myself not having a PS2, so I got a PS2. And it didn't. And it, for all you Nintendo geeks out there who are loyal to Nintendo, it doesn't feel weird. It feels normal. Go out and get a PS2. Go out and get an Xbox 360. If you like games, you'll like those systems. It's quite simple.
Well, at least a 360 as of now, there's only about 25, 30 games that are out for the 360 right now. I'm surprised at how few there are when I go and look at a list. So I don't know if we could just fully 100% recommend it.
Yeah, I will say I do kind of regret buying the 360 when I did. But I will say that this holiday, it looks like they're not going to drop the price of it. And this holiday would have been about the time I would have bought it anyway, so I would have been paying the same amount for it.
And you would have gotten four amazing games for it right off the bat rather than none. So,
well, you would have... You wouldn't. I don't know. You may have a bad system though. If you got one of the first crop.
Well, no.
Dan and I were just talking about
that. I got them. When did I get my 360? I think I got it in March. March, April, March or April or May, somewhere around then. I think it was before E3. Definitely, I got it.
Yeah, it was before E3 because you had your controller here.
And the thing is though, I've actually only bought one game for it.
This is not a good. So maybe we shouldn't advertise where you get your other games on the podcast.
Well, I this is a 360 that hasn't happened yet. So, anyways, what I was saying is I only bought one game for it, Project Gotham 3, and I played it, and you know, online it was pretty good. But then I realized, no, this isn't a very good racing game at all. It looks pretty, but strictly as a racing game, it sucks. So I took it back, and I had my 360 without very many games. I rented the odd game. I got Tomb Raider Legend, which is fantastic. Hitman Blood Money, which is fantastic. And I just finally tracked down a copy of Dead Rising, which is beyond fantastic, and I'm probably going to buy it. But the point is, until this holiday, there really haven't been any system sellers, in my opinion. It's worth it for all the marketplace stuff and all the demos, but that can only last you so long. And thankfully, like, yeah. Gears of War is coming out. What else am I going to get eventually? Forza 2, when that comes out, I might get the wireless racing wheel because I'm a stickler for expensive peripherals.
Yeah. So, Blood, I want to move on to you. How do you personally feel about the Xbox 360 and on the concept of moving from being a Nintendo fan, single console, to being a multi-console gamer?
Well, like you, I've been kind of tempted by some things like BioShock. But still, I don't know if there's enough on the 360 horizon to get me to get one. I've been looking more at the PlayStation 3 lately. And
well, $600!
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not buying that thing until well into next year because they're having production problems and they're going to let as many slip by as they can. And I'm not going to deal with, you know, having some...
You might have to actually murder someone to get it this year. I don't even know if it'd be possible.
They're going to be $600 so, well in the next year, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, part of the attraction with the PlayStation 3 for me is that I never got a PlayStation 2. And I think at this point, rather than dropping $130 on a PlayStation 2, I might as well save up sometime in the middle or end of next year, get a PlayStation 3. And then, you know, I'll be able to pick up the odd PlayStation 3 game that I want and, you know, maybe pick up a few things that I missed on PlayStation 2. And there's a lot of different things like Katamari Damacy that I haven't really got to spend a lot of time with.
Certainly, yeah. I feel like a complete idiot for having never played Shadow of the Colossus. It seems like exactly my kind of game. And so I'm...
Yeah, I had a friend bring over his PS2 and I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. So I'm personally regretting not having branched out sooner, but at the same time, now I'm financially able to branch out, and I think I might end up by the end of 2006 with both a Wii and a 360 in my living room.
Wii 60.
I didn't think I would actually
for the win.
Yeah. So TYP, do you have any anything else to add to that?
I'd have to say getting a PS2 has probably been a New Year's resolution for about 3 years now. I think it's a personality flaw of mine. I really should check out at least PS2 stuff, and I am definitely a Nintendo diehard, but I really don't have any reason why I should be, other than I don't really like the PS2 controller, but that's something I can get over. So, yeah, you know, I do regret, you know, like you say, like Shadow of the Colossus, and there have been a couple of games here and there that I've been interested in on the PS2. And I don't own a PS1 either, so, you know, things like Symphony of the Night.
Symphony of the Night, you can get on a 360 eventually through Live Arcade.
Oh, yeah, and how much will it cost, like $10?
Yeah,
$10, I think.
That's a good deal.
It is.
Well, isn't it going to be, like, butchered?
Enhanced.
You know, it's like a been artistically, quote-unquote, upgraded.
Oh, that's right.
Super Mario All-Stars.
Well, that's fine. They didn't touch the gameplay, at least.
If by upgraded they mean they re-recorded the voices, then it's actually a blessing. So.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the PS2, right. I've come to realize that right now is absolutely the worst time to catch up on previous games. Because if I don't finish Beyond Good and Evil, Okami, God of War, Shadow of the Colossus before the Wii and the PS3 comes out, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to them, because the new games are...
That's my stance on this point at the PS2, because I'm going to take the cop-out position I think Evan mentioned at the very beginning, which is I don't want to dedicate that much time to catching up on games and making sure I've played all the games on all the systems. Because I'm playing games less frequently than ever, I think, right now.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
I don't like it, but...
But, yeah, and it's because it's because of two things. One is, as Nintendo fans, there aren't a lot of games on GameCube. And two, we're getting older. Every person who gets older finds, I've got a job.
Yeah, I'm just too busy. I've got plenty of GameCube games that I have not. I think I have a list around here somewhere of like 30 or 40 GameCube games that I have not finished I own.
Yeah. I'm an idiot. I've never finished Metroid Prime 2. I feel really
pathetic.
I never
bothered playing it, so.
Wow, gosh, we are admitting, this is a focus, what do they call it, a rehab group here.
My name is Windy Man, and I have a problem.
I have not finished a single RPG that I was not reviewing since the GameCube came out.
Well, it's not like there's a ton of those to
But a DS, GBA, anything, it doesn't matter.
Oh, wow, wow. That's.
I finished Tales of Symphonia, and I should get like an award for that or something because that game is huge.
I did that too. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
In fact, I got through 2/3 of Tales of Symphonia again because I was
really?
Getting a little bored.
Congratulations.
And then, as some of you may remember, my memory card got wiped out due to quickly switching between Japanese and English games and back. So I lost lots of
the risks there. Of being a modder.
Yeah.
I feel your pain. Well, I'm glad that we had this chance to have a little catharsis, have a little therapy for each other about our gaming foibles. That's the end of our podcast, but...
No!
I know. But thank you three for showing up and for being here to talk with us on these issues. We want you all to come back. I want to mention a couple things before we're out. One is the Naruto contest. I highly recommend that you trust what I am saying, which is that Naruto, we have a copy of Clash of Ninja 2 for GameCube that we are giving out. We also have a backpack, a wristband, playing cards, and a DVD, Volume 1 of the Naruto television series. The contest is this is the last time we're going to advertise it on the podcast, because the due date is this coming Sunday. Please get your entries in, and we're going to play the winners on the next podcast. We're going to play one of the winners every week for the next 3 weeks. So if you've got a cool little 15 to 30 second audio blurb that you can record regarding Naruto, Radio Free Nintendo, PGC, anything, just mention Naruto at least once and send it in to us at contest@planetgamecube.com. You can find all the details and all the rules on planetgamecube.com. Also, if you have an opinion about our podcast, you want to share it with us, please send in an email to podcast@planetgamecube.com. We are here to, we'll listen to your mail, and we will sometimes read it here on the show, as we did today. So, please send us your opinions. Also, you can rate us on iTunes, and you can download us there. We're also available on audio. So, with that, I want to say thank you again to my three guests. And I hope that you tune in with us again next week. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Yes, this dinner's been sitting here for an hour. It has been an hour. 45 minutes?